So we're gonna continue our formal study of Sefer Melachim Aleph. We're up to Perek Zayin, Pasuk Aleph, and the conversation, or at least the description in the Navi, seems to shift for a short amount of time to focus on the personal buildings of Shlomo, and kind of a bigger picture question that I don't have a good enough answer for is. Why is it necessary for us to know all of this? We spoke about it as an introduction to hearing about the Beis HaMikdash, that first and foremost, it was a mitzvah to build the Beis HaMikdash. So we can understand that just we don't necessarily, sometimes we do ask why we have to know all the details of the Mishkan. It seems to be like we have, but the idea is that every aspect was a mitzvah and it has to be done according to the will of Hashem. This was coming through Nevuah that was given to David, either by Nasan or other Nevi'im, given to David, and David handed over the plans to Shlomo. There's an idea that the Beis HaMikdash is the house of Hashem. There's also an idea for us who haven't had a Beis HaMikdash in thousands of years. It's a way for us to appreciate what it was, and then you could try to appreciate what you lost. In hearing like the great details of Shlomo's palace, you almost ask the question, like, why is this necessary, specifically to be in Tanakh? We know that Tanakh in general, so it's not a description of everything that happened in the life of Shlomo. Just like in Sefer Shmuel, it's not a description of everything that happened. The Navi is written down, the Psukim and that which is the narratives, everything that is important for the Jews to know for all time. That even in 2019, it's important for us to know. So the burning question for us, why is it so important to know? So I don't necessarily have an approach. The only thing that I was able to think of just myself is that maybe if it's true that we're talking about this being the golden age of Jewish sovereignty over the land of Israel, so when you hear about the magnificence of the personal buildings of Shlomo, it's just a window into what was existing in Jewish society at that time, of how affluent the society was, how prominent it was, and you know, so maybe that's part of the reason why it's included. I mean, it's included because it's obviously important for us to know. But again, trying to think about, and if you have any ideas yourself, as we're reading it, why you think it's important for us to know, it's definitely something, at least a little bit bigger picture. So the first Pasuk Aleph in Perek Zayin, the Esbeso Bana Shlomo, Shalosh Esrei Shana. And his house, which we're going to see, we're not just talking about his personal palace, but it's going to be almost like a complex of personal buildings Shlomo built, Shlosh Esrei Shana, 13 years, Vayichalas Kol Beiso, and he finished his whole house. So we have in our Tanakh, it changed from Perek Vav to Perek Zayin. There's a chapter change. But as we've always pointed out and constantly point out, the chapters were not Jewish inventions. It was not Chazal who made the chapters. And if you opened up a Sefer Melachim written as a scroll, you would not see any paragraph break between the Pasuk that came before and this Pasuk, Perek Zayin, Pasuk Aleph. And the Pasuk begins with the word Ve'es. Ve'es usually is continuing something that happened previously. And Chazal pick up on this, and the Mefarshim pick up on this. We are connecting the Beis HaMikdash with Shlomo's palace in a way to give praise to Shlomo. Because the previous two Pesukim spoke about how quickly, or obviously it's still a long project, but there were 7 years and 7 months that Shlomo took to build the Beis HaMikdash, and yet it took him 13 years to build his personal complex. And the understanding is that the Beis HaMikdash was more elaborate than these personal structures that are also going to be elaborate. And therefore, Shlomo put more of an emphasis, more of a focus on building the house of God than building his own personal home, which is always, you know, sometimes, you know, I guess we are blessed to live in a place where many people have beautiful homes, but they also have a beautiful place of house for Hashem. And I imagine in some communities where it's not that way, people should be asking themselves a little question: why is it that you put such a focus on your own, but not not on the house of Hashem? There were certain rules in Europe. I remember the one time I went on a tour of Poland. So we saw a number of shuls. We noticed how when you came into the shul, you had to walk down to get into the sanctuary. And the tour guide explained that there were rules in certain towns in Europe that the tallest building had to be the church, and nothing could be taller. So if you wanted a large structure and you wanted this feeling of, you know, kind of greatness of Hashem to be in a big room, so you couldn't make the ceiling taller, you'd have to dig down. It's not the tallest building, even if it's, you know, the highest from ceiling to floor. Shlomo had this praise towards him that he put more of a focus on building the Beis HaMikdash. Some explain that he only began the construction of his personal homes after the Beis HaMikdash was complete. Obviously, he wasn't homeless. He was living, right, either it's in David's palace or some other type of dwelling. But now we're going to read about much more elaborate dwellings, which in comparison, David never built. And you might say that you know, you see the difference between two different, and maybe this is part of the reason why we have it. It's two different kind of kings. Who's David? David is the king who, first of all, begins his first years of being king as only king of one tribe. Then he's the king who, there isn't necessarily a recognized national capital. He establishes the national capital, but he doesn't yet get a chance to build the Beis HaMikdash. It's not as independent of a monarchy as maybe it could be when David is there. Who's Shlomo? Shlomo is born into it. Shlomo is born when David is at, okay, obviously he's born when David's not at the height of his malchus because of some of how Shlomo was born. But the idea is that at that time the country was firm. While David maybe has a spiritual up and down, the country itself was firmly established, and Shlomo becomes being king. He is crowned in the capital. He is the one who gets to build the Beis HaMikdash. And so there's license now for him to maybe be a little bit more of a classic monarch, which would include these elaborate personal structures. So we're going to hear in great detail. The pictures that at least the art scroll has is helpful, but it's not everything. And as far as we know, we don't have. I don't believe there's so many depictions of these things out there. When these structures of Shlomo were destroyed, I don't know offhand. They may have, you know, you have to imagine there were from the time of now until the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, there were opportunities for maybe these structures to be damaged by people on the outside. Maybe it's when the Babylonians destroy the first Beis HaMikdash. And maybe some of the structures stayed for even longer, but we don't necessarily know the history of it, but this is the beginning of it.
What year was it finished?
What year was what finished?
The Beis HaMikdash, the first one.
So the first Beis HaMikdash,
because it was destroyed like 586, right? BCE.
So the tradition is that the first Beis HaMikdash stood for 410 years.
Okay.
So if you want to do that would be 996 BCE.
Okay. Yeah, so I'll end it to 1,000.
There's the very famous 160 years of Jewish history that are missing. When you sit there and you try to do any of the calculations, so everyone throws out that number 586 BCE. Right. As the secular year that the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. How many years did the Jews spend in exile? Famous number. 70 years. So that means the exile comes to an end in 516 BCE. Right. Presumably that's when they start building the second Beis HaMikdash, and the second Beis HaMikdash stands for 420 years. But if you're at 516 BCE, and now you add 420 years... you don't get to 70 CE. And so there are these, you can go do some homework. There are some theories how we kind of, it's pretty good. We have most of history down from like the time the Jews leave Egypt until now. It's been 3,000 years. So if we're off by, not off, but if you can't, okay. So I don't remember. They're very intelligent people that have written essays on this, if not books. So you're more than, I don't have such an interest per se. Like it's like But it's a quandary. So how you figure it?
So the mess doesn't work. Okay.
So either the second base Hamikdash stood for longer, but for whatever reason Chazal only call it 420, 420 years. You have to do something. So you'll find out if you want. If not, it'll stay a question, and we could just pretend like everything works nice.
It's a miracle.
Yeah, basically. Fine. So let's Pasuk Beis. This is the beginning of the personal buildings. Vayiven es beis yar halavanon. And he built a structure that's referred to as the house of the forest of Lebanon. Me'ama arko, it was 100 amos long. V'chamishim ama rochbo, and 50 amos wide. U'shloshim ama komaso, and 30 amos tall. Al arba ture amude arazim, upon 4 rows of cedar posts, uchrusos arazim al hamudim, and beams made of cedar upon these posts. The term base yar halavonon, it was some type of house that was either in or next to a forest that was referred to as Lebanon. To refer to a forest, and there's right in Yerushalayim, there is a forest today. Right, I don't know what direction it is, but I think Yad Vashem is near it, if I'm not mistaken. But they refer to something as the Yar. Yeah, maybe nothing. Okay, take my word for it. I doubt this is that, because we need to be closer to Ir David, I think. But there was a forest. The forest is called Lebanon. It's not a jump to call a forest Lebanon, because Lebanon is known for tall trees. So if there was a forest at that time of tall trees, you could understand why maybe they gave it the nickname Lebanon. The Rashi quoting from the Targum, understands that while the description is going to be quite elaborate, this was like a summer home. This was closer to the forest in shade, and it was built in an kind of an aerodynamic type of way to maximize the flow of air and to be a little bit more cool. A little bit of a question. We seem to focus on this building a lot, as opposed to maybe where Shlomo lived all year round. The fact that it's on, right, it says that at the end of the pasuk, it talks about it being on these posts. So some of the Mefarshim understand that it was a building that was raised. And so the bottom level of the building were all these cedar posts. On top of the cedar posts go the cedar beams that went ahead and act as the ground level for this structure. The Art Scroll has a picture that might help you if you like, so you could take a look if it's going to help as we read. There were other Mefarshim.
I have an aerial
of
Beit Yar Halavanon. It just looks like an aerial.
But it's drawing or it's real?
It must be more contemporary, because how can you get an aerial view from the time?
Yeah.
So, no, I think it's.
Oh, it's a picture. Like
it's
an archaeological dig.
But I think it's a recent picture of what it must have of. Right. What they think.
I don't think
was.
It's helping. That
it's
much.
Not helping me.
Yeah. Right.
Any arrows.
Just,
right.
Yeah.
Labels.
Pasuk Gimel. Visafun, which we saw as a language for the ceiling, the same that we had that language by the Beis HaMikdash. Visafun ba'arez. It was, the roof of it was cedar wood. Mimal alatzlaos asher lamudim. This it was roofed with cedar that was on top of the boards, which were on top of the pillars. Arba'im v'chamisha, chamisha asar hatur. There were 45 of these ceiling boards or pieces of ceiling that were organized 15 in a row. And so, going across the length of the building were these ceiling tiles. Pasuk Dalet, Ushkufim Shlosha Turim. Umechaze el mechaze shalosh pamim. So Shkufim come from the word Lashkif, to look out, right? The right, we sometimes we refer to hashkafa, right? What's hashkafa? Hashkafa is an outlook. It has to do with, so these were windows. The windows were set up in a way that there were three rows of windows. Umechazel mechazeh, they were each opening was opposite other openings. Shalosh pamim, all three of the sets of windows, meaning there to maximize airflow again. If on one side of the building you have open space and through windows, and on the other side you have open space, that will give the ability for air to flow. Again, they're not living with central air, so it is, yeah, I guess, impressive that they're able to maybe construct it in a way that would be make things more comfortable in the Jerusalem heat. Mm-hmm. Pasuk Hey. V'chol ha-psachim v'ha-mezuzos revu'im shakef. All of the doorways and the doorposts had four-sided frames. Shakef, they were open spaces, almost like a window. Umul mechazel mechazel shalosh pamim, again, opposite each other. Why is it pointing out, perhaps, that it was classical four-sided door frame? So again, we saw last time in the Beis HaMikdash, there were some interesting doors that were not necessarily shaped this way. Pasuk Vav, v'yes ulam hamudim asa chamishim ama orko. So we saw in the Beis HaMikdash that the word ulam gets translated as hall or antechamber. And so for this structure, Shlomo HaMelech made an ulam as well. So in front of this house of the Yar Levanon, there was an ulam. The ulam was made upon pillars, and it was 50 amos in its length. So the length of this ulam matched the width of the forest house. Ushloshem amos rochbo, 30 amos wide. V'ulam al pnehem, the ulam was in front of the building. V'amudim av al pnehem, and the pillars were thick. So this was the elaborate entranceway. So this is one. I imagine you would, these two buildings go together. So this is one, within the complex of his personal buildings. You have this perhaps summer house, and you have this elaborate entranceway into the summer house. Pasuk Zion, we describe a totally different structure. The ulam hakisei asher yishbot sham, ulam hamishpat asa. There was an ulam, there was a hall of the hakisei, the chair, or the throne, asher yishbat sham, that he would judge there. Ulam hamishpat asa, a hallway of judgment he made. V'safun ba'arez, they were, again, roofed with cedar. Mehakarka ad hakarka, from one end of the floor to the other end of the floor. Which makes it sound like the majority of this, well, we are going to talk about the floor being stone, but from one end of the floor to the other end of the floor, if you're talking about the ceiling, so clearly you're also encompassing the walls as well. So the walls are made out of cedar wood, and so was the ceiling. Mepharshim debate whether this was two structures or one structure.
You mean if this is a second ulam, or you mean?
If where it says the ulam hakiseh sheyishbat sham, and then it says ulam hamishpat, is it describing one place, or is it actually two places? But this is clearly not a place. At least the initial description of hakiseh sheyishbat sham, the place this is almost like the where he would judge. You have to imagine that this is his main. Place where he would, this is his main throne where he would judge the people, acting as we've seen that the king, in addition to being melech, is also a type of shofet, also a type of judge. And we'd already seen that Shlomo was world famous, if not regionally famous, for his ability to judge. It's only in Pasuk Ches that we hear about what seems to be his personal home and his main, you have to imagine it's his main place of residence. And the questions, and it's almost described in the least with the least fanfare. And I don't necessarily know why that is. Again, in the overall, if you look at this, what we're going to call his personal complex, where he built many personal buildings. So overall, the description is wordy and impressive, and maybe that's enough. But here we read about his house in Patsaches, Uveso Asher Yeshiv Sham, the house where he lived, Chatzer Acheres, was in another courtyard, Mibes Leulam, it was beyond the hallway, Kemase Hazeh Haya, it was a similar type of construction as the previous buildings, with the, as we'll see, a stone floor and cedar wood for the walls and for the roof. He also made a separate house for the daughter of Paro, whom Shlomo had taken, and constructed it in a similar way. Why is it that he has a separate house for this wife? It may be some type of foreshadowing of the fact that while she did, we explained that she did convert to Judaism, but we explained that this was a time period where, in general, Chazal explained that converts weren't really supposed to be accepted, because this was a time of prosperity, and sometimes, right, if someone wants to, you know, let's say you get a European individual says they want to become Jewish now, you'll be like, what, are you crazy? But if they were sincere, so we understand they're really sincere. But when things are good, why she has a separate house, that may be some type of hint that she wasn't, you know, maybe fully on board. And so she has a separate place to dwell, and what, you know, perhaps what kind of impact that has on the future, which we'll circle back to definitely towards the end of Shlomo's life.
How many other wives did he have now?
So we haven't been told anything.
But he had other wives.
That's the assumption.
Was it his first wife?
It seems to be described that way.
Right.
So if we go with that, then that's all we have to go with. We had pointed out when we read those psukim that it's a little striking that would be his first man. I mean, even if you want to go with the approach that, you know, foreign relations is extremely important and making alliances and, you know, that all of that and is important, you know, I don't know, it's not as important as, you know, finding a nice Jewish wife and having, you know, producing the next, as far as I know, she's not the mother of the next king, which is his son Rehavam. I'm forgetting offhand the prakim that come. I didn't cheat ahead. I'm pretending like I don't know anything. We'll see the development.
But do you think that it was a practice in those days that the king's wife had her own quarters? Like it might have been just a common way of doing things.
It's possible.
Especially if they're royalty. Like how much, right? Like was she his most royal wife? Like from her own background?
I mean, well, so far we know she's the only one.
Right.
If you have multiple wives, you
right.
kind of need them each.
Right.
In their,
so David, want
like
them
each
of David
quarters. Too much trouble if they're together.
Probably. David married. He married one foreign princess who had converted to Judaism, and that was the mother. I think Avshalom's mother was from the kingdom of Geshur, which is why when Avshalom ran away after he killed Amnon, Avshalom ran to the kingdom of Geshur because it's his maternal grandfather, you know, again, with conversion, you know, maybe then halachically related, okay, but he had a place to run to. We never saw David treating her any different, but maybe it's a combination of the fact that A, she was queen, and that might be normal, and B, she was royalty herself, right. So she's kind of used to a certain standard, high maintenance. So it's possible. Now, in all of these buildings, we never talked about the floor, and we never talked about, well, we did in the And the base yar levanon, so that sounds like it was all cedar.
Mm-hmm.
Here in Pasuk Tes, we hear about the usage of stones in the construction. Pasuk Tes, kol eila, all of these buildings, in addition to what we've stated, avanim yekaros kimidos gazis. They were built along with avanim yekaros, which you could translate as precious to stones. But some of the farshim, as we saw, Rashi, before when this phrase was used, yekaros here means like heavy stones. If the foundation stones shouldn't be a soft rock. They were heavy stones. Kimidos gazis, they were the normal size of hewn stones. Megoreros b'magrira mibayis michutz, they were smoothed on all mibayis michutz, inside and outside, meaning all six sides of a stone. Right, when you see some of the stone, right, some of the Jerusalem stone that you see. So the part that's facing the outside of the house is still rough.
Mm-hmm.
But when they build on top of each other, they're making that smooth so that it fits together like a brick.
Right.
So Shlomo's was using stones that were smooth all over. They made these marble stones smooth on all sides. They were able to do that even on site, as opposed to the Beis HaMikdash, which said the building couldn't happen with hewn stones, at least happening at the building site, but this is not the Beis Hashem. This is a personal home, or a personal kingly complex. Umimasad aratvachos umichutz arachatzer hagdola. They were used umimaseid. They were used as the yisod. They were used as the foundation. Aratvachos. Tvachos, I don't know what the individual translation is. The Radak and others translate it as the ceiling, which is how Art School translates, but I don't know what the source of the word is, and the Mitzvah Tzion doesn't say. What is your translation of Tvachos? We have one more translation here. Umimasad ad ha-tvachos.
What pasuk is that?
In 9.
Oh.
All of these precious stones.
Up from the coping, that means. Foundation up the coping.
It's the Shemi Korah.
So the word Korah, how's it spelled? So that could just mean a beam, or it could be the term for the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
But this was the type of stones that were used. Umichutz v'arachatzer hagdola. And it was used outside, even including until the great courtyard. Umiyusad avanim yikaros, avanim gedolos. The foundation had these precious stones, larger stones. So this is maybe, because here we hear measurements. These are maybe on the bottom level of these foundations. Avne eser amos, stones that were 10 amos long. But avne shmona amos, and stones that were 8 amos long, which is extremely long, extremely heavy, and extremely magnificent. They were able to use such a thing. And it talks about building levels. The largest stones were on the bottom. And pasuk yudalef umimala avanim yikaros kimidos gazis va'arez, that on top were maybe the more valuable stones that were built, that were more like bricks, that were more like the normal size of cut stones together with cedar. Pasigid Beis. V'chatzer hagdola saviv. There's a great courtyard, and maybe this great courtyard is encompassing all the structures that we've been describing. And it sounds very similar to the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash. Shlosha turim gazis, 3 columns in terms of making the wall. 3 columns of stone, cut stone. V'tur krusos arazim, and 1 column made from cedar. V'lachatzer Beis Hashem ha-peninis. This was similar to the chatzer of the Beis Hashem, the inner one, ulam habayis, and that encompassed also the ulam of the Beis HaMikdash. So ends the description of Shlomo's personal buildings. And again, I come back to that question of, you know, why do we have to know so much? Which in essence, I'm not sure. Clearly it's important. And maybe it's, again, somehow to highlight the beauty and the grandeur that existed then.
See, it's funny. I think it's like foreshadowing his excessiveness.
Foreshadowing what?
His excessiveness. You know what I mean? Like Rashi, whatever, looked at it as a good thing that he built the Beis HaMikdash much more quickly. Even, right?
Well,
and I'm looking at it as a, oh, wait, he built the Beis HaMikdash in 7 years, but yet it took him, but he built his house 13 years.
You're saying it's more time.
It's more time. It's more excessive. I think it's like foreshadowing that. You know, that
you could maybe make the excessive argument without necessarily focusing on the years. Just saying,
I think that's the beginning. Because right. Like that's what the V, I think, leads to. You know what I mean? Like in contrast, without the word contrast.
Right.
You know, like he built that in 7 years, right? Because it
right. Well, listen, one of the.
He finished in 7 years, and his house he built in 13 years.
One of the commandments that a king is supposed to follow is not to have too much wealth, not to have too much in the treasuries, not to have too much wealth, because then, like the rest of us, we all think that we're as powerful as our savings account is. And if someone has a lot in savings, they're powerful, even though, or they have a lot, right? But that's not how, but a king could, the same way he could put his trust in having so many horses, same thing, he could put his trust in his treasury. And that takes away from the fact that he relies solely on Hashem.
Hashem gave the directions of how to build
the Beis HaMikdash.
But who gave the directions for Shlomo's house?
It sounds like it's personal.
So there has to be an architect there.
Oh, who?
Well, you think he? Right. Hired the architect, right? That's what I'm saying. So I think he.
Yeah. But it's
overboard.
That,
you know.
I mean, so what you're saying makes sense. That
to me, it does.
No. I mean, why is Shlomo? I can understand the Beis HaMikdash being described in such detail, but why Shlomo's house?
Right.
And why?
Again,
is it noted that his wife had a separate palace? I mean, why?
So. One thing I mentioned before was that maybe, and I'll highlight it again, is that, you know, it might be in contrast to David, that David didn't do any of these things. And not in the sense that Shlomo is wrong for doing it, but it kind of shows us how established the country was, that the king could do these things. And it kind of sets a certain depiction for us of how prosperous the country was. A king who could build these things and not have to raise taxes, a king who could build these things, and no one is upset at the amount that he's spending on it. It's because the whole country was doing well. Which you might contrast that, as we'll see, it doesn't remain that at the end of Shlomo's time, and I don't think it's because of the palace at the end of Shlomo's time, which is still right. Even if we want to say this is 13, you still have another 20 years of him being king. At the end, the money situation in the country is different, and that, you know, that will inform us on certain things after Shlomo is finished being king. Now, I'll ask another question. I'm sorry to give you questions without answers, but that's part of this. We're flipping back to Beis HaMikdash. In Pasuk Yodalad, we're going back to Beis HaMikdash, really until the end of the Perek. It's going to be quite detailed, some other things, really until the end of the Perek. And in Perek Ches is talking about actually dedicating the Beis HaMikdash with the people. So why is it that we have a major Beis HaMikdash description and then another major Beis HaMikdash description with this break in the middle of Shlomo's palace?
Right.
It sounded like he finished everything. Now we're going to see these aspects of the Beis HaMikdash are clearly the icing on the cake. They're clearly the last things that had to happen, and it's not part of the physical building of the Beis HaMikdash, so you understand why it's separate. But why did we take a break? I don't have an answer for this. Why did we take a break and have Shlomo's palace in the middle, as opposed to finishing totally with Beis HaMikdash, and maybe even dedicating the Beis HaMikdash, and then tell us about it. And then if you want to tell us about Shlomo's palace, tell us about Shlomo's palace.
Shlomo's palace
came after this next part.
Yeah.
Like it was.
Yeah, so you got, right, Perek, you have to imagine we're going out of order because in Perek Ches, we're going to, Shlomo's going to gather everyone. He's going to dedicate the Beis HaMikdash in Tishrei, near Sukkot's time. So you have to imagine that happened right when the Beis HaMikdash was finished. That'll be a question. We'll discuss.
The Beis HaMikdash was his palace, even though it says it was maybe
correct. It's happening simultaneously. But why not? Why not first tell us? Why not finish the Beis HaMikdash first? Everything, all description, and dedicate the Beis HaMikdash, and then tell us about the palace. Why is it
contrast wouldn't be as I think as sharp.
In Rashi's idea, that's a shevach, right?
Right, and in mine, right, exactly.
Right, okay.
Exactly.
Maybe it's like a foreign relations thing. Like, I think, you know, what you were saying about how prosperous the country was, so it gives legitimacy to the Israeli regime among the nations of the world.
Right, when people come and visit, they're going to see a capital city that's full of impressive structures, both on a religious level and then for the government. And you know, it's gonna, you know, Lahavdil, you go to Washington, there are some really impressive buildings. And just the physical buildings, you know, are supposed to add importance to the city. You know, sometimes you have other things that take away, but at least in the perfect world, the grant, especially Washington, what happens to be like a planned out, it was planned in a certain way that you look one, right? You look one way and you see one thing, you look the other way, you see the other thing. It just adds. So maybe where you're saying, all the people, we've already read about all the people that would come and visit the land of Israel at this time. So maybe Shlomo had to almost, it's part of being a leader in a region is looking the part.
It's an international almost.
Right.
But it doesn't explain why it was placed.
Oh, no, that does not answer this.
No, but it could be so that this way when they do the dedication, then they see, like if we found out about Shlomo's palace after the dedication, like now when we hear about the dedication, you have a picture of Shlomo's palace and the Beis HaMikdash in your mind.
Right, but he's not dedicating his palace.
Right, but you see what the country, what Israel is about,
who's
you know.
To the Beis HaMikdash dedication?
Well, let's get there. Parakas. Well, let's wait. Okay. Let's wait.
Well, maybe.
Yeah, because we have to. The timelines also, right? Like, is it?
But when they come for to dedicate the Beis HaMikdash, his palace
done?
Is
it's
no.
Not, it's half done, right?
It's 12 years before it being done.
Right, so but they get to finish the Beis HaMikdash first, right?
But they get to see.
They see that big like construction site, you know, like maybe a cutout. You know, they have that little the little cutout.
Yeah, they see the fence. Yeah, the zoning.
So there was one specific project, which is quite detailed, that Shlomo needed specific assistance, and Pasuk Yudalid, Vayishlach HaMelech Shlomo. Vayikach es Chiram Mitzor. Now this is going to get confusing.
Yeah.
Shlomo sent for Chiram from Tzor. We already saw a king who was king of Sidon and Tzor,
right,
whose name was Chiram.
Right.
This is not him. That king was not Jewish. As we're about to describe, this individual is Jewish.
Right.
So it's a little confusing with the names.
Yeah,
I can't explain it. It's just there, but it's not the same person.
Okay.
So Shlomo sends for him, and then we hear a little bit about his background. Pasuk Yudalid, Ben Isha Almanahu Mimate Naphtali. He was the son of a widowed woman from the tribe of Naphtali. The Aviv Ish Tzori. His father was a man who lived in Tyre, in Tzor. Choresh Nechoshes, who was a coppersmith. That's the father. Vayemalei es hachachma ves hatfuna ves hadas. And now we're describing this Chiram. He was filled with chachma, wisdom, tvuna, understanding, ves hadas, and knowledge. Lasos kol malacha banachoshes. He was an expert in the malach of nachoshes in working with the metal, copper. Vayovo el ha-melech Shlomo, He came to Shlomo. He arrived. Vayasas kol malachto. He did his entire work. He was trained in many things, but he was an expert in copper, and that's why Shlomo went ahead and Shlomo went ahead and got him.
Why would we need to know that his mother was a widow?
Not sure. The other thing to make things complicated, if they're not already, is that in Divrei Hayamim, it says that she was from the tribe of Dan, and not from Naphtali, so that his father might have been from Naphtali, his mother was from Dan. This is a nice idea, which I think is just a nice idea, in that by mentioning the tribe of when Divrei Hayam mentions the tribe of Dan, so there's a little bit of a mirror image. The Mishkan was built by Bezalel. Mm-hmm. Bezalel came from the tribe of Yehuda. His assistant was Eliav, who came from the tribe of Dan. At least some part of building the Beis HaMikdash, it's being directed by Shlomo, who comes from the tribe of Yehuda, and now we've incorporated someone from the tribe of Dan. The two tribes, Yehuda and Dan, are normally kind of thought of as like the extreme bookends of Klal Yisrael. Yehuda is the most prominent, the leader, and Dan is the slacker. Dan is the lowest tribe. Dan was in the back when they traveled in the desert. Dan was the tribe that only had the Erev Rav, the those Egyptians that kind of came along and ended up causing a lot of trouble along the way. They were with Dan. Dan was always considered to be not necessarily the most prominent of tribes. Mm-hmm. When it comes to building the Mishkan, so we have Yehuda and Dan coming to build the Beis HaMikdash, there's an element of Yehuda and Dan that all of Klal Yisrael had a portion. Why we're told who his parents are at all. Again, it seems that his father was a coppersmith, so
we know he wasn't alive anymore.
We know he wasn't alive anymore, and it sounds like we know where he got his copper skills from. Now, what's a nice Jewish family doing living up north in Tyre, in Tsur? I have no idea. We take it for granted, obviously, that Jews live outside the land of Israel. When did that start? Mm-hmm. Right, you have Yehoshua coming in with Klal Yisrael in the year 2488, trying to conquer the land and divide the land in 14 years. And this is, let's just say, approximately 420 years later, and we're hearing about a Jew who lives in Lebanon. Now, there are no shuls anywhere then, so you don't have to say, like, where did he daven? But were they an anomaly? Did that exist? Jews move out. They haven't even built the Beis HaMikdash yet, the first one, and Jews are living in Lebanon. At least this one is.
Which was that's where his work was.
Right. Right, but so how, I don't know, this is like a curious question, like how common, like was there a Jewish community living in the, you can't call it the exile, there's no exile yet.
Which tribe was the one that was blessed to be the merchants?
Like sea merchants?
Yeah.
Zevulun.
So like they probably had sort of satellite communities, no?
I have no idea.
Makes sense. That's how they started, I think, right? Wasn't it all, you know, a lot of the Jewish communities started from trade, I thought.
But when?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that might be the answer post-destruction of the Second Temple.
I mean, you could say the Jews immediately didn't. They had, I mean, the two and a half tribes that didn't want to live in Israel.
But they're in a place that they conquered with their leaders and set up shop there. Here we're talking about a place that was not conquered and was never conquered. It never became part of Israel. And they're living with a foreign king. So it's just a curiosity that I don't know.
How about this? So they say that Av could be teacher, right? Rather than a birth father.
Okay.
And maybe because his mother was a widow, he had to move to a community where they seemingly had this trade. Because he needed a trade, and that's where he learned it. And I guess he had knack for it. And so that's why it's important to know his mother was, because why else would he be living up there?
So this is not common. This is not, well, that's good, I like right?
Well, just sort of whatever I can
it's not common. And it, based on unique circumstances, they left the land. And now he obviously made such a name for himself that Shlomo knows he exists,
right?
Or at least Shlomo's people know. Like, right? we're not told
because right, he's not local.
We're not told all of the details. The pasuk goes out of its way to talk about Chachma, Tvuna, and Das, which are similar, obviously different levels of, you know, in our own davening. We say Ata Chonin LaAdam Das. We talk about Chachma, Bina, Das. A lot of times we describe Chachma as being like the raw wisdom, and while Bina is a lot of times it translated as understanding, it's able to take wisdom and kind of either compare and contrast or analyze a certain level of deeper understanding. The Gemara actually talks about that I don't know if we're allowed to say this, men and women are different, and that women possess more Bina, that's why there's a ladies magazine, they call it Bina, I know because we get it, and the Gemara even says something about how, like, I think the statement is like 10 portions of Bina came down to the world, 9 went to women and 1 went to men, but the ability to understand like one thing from another thing, so they're different, and then And then Das, you have to say something about Das. I don't know. But this description is similar to what was how Bezalel in the building of the Mishkan is described in a similar way. And we know in that definitely a lot is talked about that when it came to Bezalel, it wasn't necessarily something that he earned. According to tradition, Bezalel was like a 12-year-old boy. So clearly it was something that was, you know, and how would a 12-year-old boy who grew up as a slave, you know how to build a, so it was something, it was gifts that were given to him by Hashem, and maybe the same thing here, that this individual, this Chiram, he was kind of, it doesn't say it, but he was definitely endowed with great wisdom. And Shlomo was bringing him in, again, for a specific copper project, which is very detailed, and God willing, we will start with it next week.